Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's podcast. How are you
Hi guys,
doing?
welcome back. Welcome to another week of Romance and Color.
Yes. It has been a very busy couple of weeks for me. How was your weekend, Bikini, and Tupelo?
It was good. We just came off of a long weekend, which was so nice. I swear, every time we have those long weekends, I just start fantasizing about what retirement would be like and how wonderful that will be and how I'll be able to fill my time with just the things that I enjoy doing. So yeah, no, it was great. It was a balance of kid stuff and me time, braces appointments and boxing lessons, and then just me catching up on some movies. YouTube has good movies, like old movies that like a couple years old. Like I watched some movies I'd seen before with my crush Lamon Rucker, and I forget her his the actress, but they had the movie where they're like a married couple who were like relationship experts, and they have their show, but they like don't get along and they're separated. So I watched old movies like that I'd seen. So yeah, it was a good weekend. I really enjoyed myself. What about you? How was your weekend?
Super busy. It was busy from Valentine's Day on. We went out to eat for Valentine's Day, and after that, I had to get prepare myself for this conference. I went to
Yes.
the inaugural Love Y'all Atlanta conference, and I had a great time. I got to meet so many authors. I got to meet so many people I admire. I got to meet Tia Williams, which is crazy.
I remember her from her blog Shake Your Beauty, which when I had a blog years and years ago, and like when I was in when we were in grad school, when I was in New York, and it was like 2002, 2003, 2004, I remember she had Shake Your Beauty, and that's the only way I knew her. I was like, is that the same Tia Williams?
Yes,
Because that's how you
it
posted about her, and it
is. Yes, it is.
was. That's so
Yes,
cool.
it is. And she's pivoted to doing romance novels and stuff. She did The Perfect Find, which was a Netflix movie with Gabrielle Union. And so she's doing great. Was so
That's
sweet,
awesome.
so beautiful in person, really kind, really
Yes.
sweet. And I meet all these other famous authors, Taj McCoy and Denise Williams and Nikki Payne and all these other people that I talk about so much on the podcast who've come on
That's
to.
gotta be so cool and surreal for you
Yeah,
to just see
it
these
was very surreal.
people.
And the most surreal part was thinking that, like, I'm sitting there at this signing, I'm like, people don't even know who the hell I am, right? And so people coming up to me, not just, sometimes as a black author, I kind of feel like I'm in a bubble. And I'm like, nobody knows me but the black people. You know what I mean? Or the people on TikTok or people on Instagram, whatever. But I had so many people, particularly, other people coming up to me like, oh my God, I follow you on TikTok. I follow you on Instagram. Oh my God, I'm so excited. I came here to see you. I'm like, what?
Oh
Like,
my
which
gosh.
is so crazy. And I
That's
got,
amazing.
I know I took pictures with people, and so it was so crazy, but I had such a good time. I was on four panels, I did two signings, and so by the end of it, I was exhausted. So
Oh my
like
goodness.
I had a good time. It was worth it. It was
I knew it
cool.
was. And I'm shocked that you would be surprised that because I feel like you're probably so many people's like, oh my God, it's her. They're the dream author, the person they want to meet. And
on, I
I'm like,
want to. I only got two books out. I mean,
it
but
doesn't matter. You have such a I feel like you've really built your online following, and you have a whole community of people who, I'm sure are colleagues as well as people who just read you and enjoy you. So yeah, you've made a force and stuff like that.
I
So
appreciate that, you're keen. I really
it's
do. But
true.
I'm being humble because I'm not up there with, Tia Williams and Kennedy Ryan and shit. I'm just me. I'm just
No,
me.
I understand. Right. It's going to always be that little bit of imposter syndrome, but I
Yeah.
mean, at the same time, it's like you're there and you're yeah, and girl, yeah. So,
Yeah, these
but
are
I feel
colleagues.
like the more you
I
do, you
don't need to
really
be
pick yourself up.
intimidated because, yeah, right. I don't need to be intimidated because these are my colleagues, but yeah.
And they respect you and they know your work and stuff
Yeah,
like
which
that.
is wild. Like if you have somebody come up to me like, I read your book, I loved it. Da, 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 da. I'm like, what? Like, yeah, it was really cool. So that was pretty much my weekend. And
That's
week is
awesome.
preparing for that and then trying to work. But you're right, I'm ready for retirement, my dang self. I already got a five.
To just
I got
do
my
the
five.
things that I enjoy. It always baffles me when people are like, Now, I don't know what I'm going to do after retire. And I have people at my job, I work at a hospital, who after retirement, they come back and they work part time or they
Yeah,
volunteer.
me.
Because
I'm
for them, it's everything. And I think they feel lost without it. For me, I have so many things, child, that I can't wait to do when I
I'm
have
gonna
them.
make sure I retire where I'm young enough to like
Yes.
enjoy it. So that's why I say I have 5 years to like this is my 5 year plan. I plan on
Yeah.
retiring 5 years.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. That'd be wonderful.
Yep. I'll be at my job for 25 years. So it'd be time for me to retire. So
Nice, nice,
yeah.
nice, nice. Wow.
But anyway, last week, y'all, we did a little Valentine's Day special. We talked about all the things you can do in your city and Valentine's Day and all that stuff. Hope you all took advantage of that for the Valentine's Day holiday and did some cool things. Like I said, I didn't do anything but go out to eat. So that was like nothing too special. I got flowers and all that, but that's just pretty much an everyday occurrence in this. I also talked about my Beverly Jenkins reread. Talked about Vivid and a couple of Valentine's Day novellas, which were My Anti-Valentine by Danielle Allen and Plus Us by Tannen. And I think we talked about something else on movies, but I don't remember. But
Yeah.
gotta go back and watch them. We gotta go back and listen to the podcast. So, do we have any hot topics in romance? I know what one hot topic is. Dating
Not sure what your hot topic is because it was a
Batista and this 51 part.
yeah.
Why did I get married?
And who is my
Before
husband and all this stuff.
did I marry?
So I was
Oh,
saying to you before we recorded that I need to start from the very beginning and catch up, or if someone could send me like a really good thorough recap of the whole breakdown, because it reminds me of, remember like a month or so ago, there was the other woman who found out the husband was having an affair when he traveled and whatever it was
And
on the
then
airline,
the only
he doing the food. Right.
the difference
So
is
now
this
there's
man
like this
is
trend.
broke. The difference is
Wait,
this
say that
man,
again.
the difference is this man is broke. He ain't rich. He ain't got no money. He
No,
ain't got
broke
no
in a scam.
job.
Nope. I mean, just like this whole trend now of people kind of like going on TikTok to like share their story in parts. And this woman now has like millions of followers and is probably
Million.
making all sorts of money from this. I have not listened to one episode. I actually had anticipated being prepared in this podcast because I wanted to talk about it. But it's so many. I got overwhelmed, child. When I saw it, I said, oh
Honestly,
my God.
Kiki, all you need is a
Yeah.
cliff notes. The cliff notes is she met somebody. He wasn't who he said he was. He lied about his profession. He lied
But
about.
wait, this is her husband of some years though, right? She didn't just meet him,
No.
right?
She only married. She married him quickly,
Okay.
but they weren't married that long. They got a quick divorce. He scammed. He took money. He wasn't
Mercy.
who he said he was. He's a pathological liar,
Oh,
saying
Jesus.
people had died, but people hadn't really died in his life.
So does this need to be
I'll cover
50
it.
parts or however many?
No, homegirl could have summed this up in like two parts, like
So
literally.
she's a smart businbusinessman. She done broke
Yes,
it down, and
yeah,
she
she
has
is.
people hanging on like on the edge of their seat with this, like sides
And
up.
I feel bad for her, but I can tell that she's the person that bought into the whole I did everything right.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to have a good husband, a good man.
Yeah.
I wasn't a hoe. I went out in the street. I was a Christian. I worked. I da, 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 and all this stuff. And
Jeez,
I
that's
answered.
so many of our stories. It's
That's
not
so many of
just,
our stories.
yeah, there's
And
good women, there's women,
then,
meeting the wrong guy and not him not being who you thought he was. That's an age-old kind of story.
angel dilemma. And then you know what? So many of women get played to the left.
Yeah,
Like it's just
every day.
every day. But I mean her story is not uncommon. This is home of this is Atlanta, the home of the homosexual. So these this dude ain't have no house, didn't have no job.
Mercy.
He had a twin brother. So basically
What?
he was basically pretending to be his twin brother, like lying about his life.
Now,
Lying about his life and using his twin brother's parts of his life
I'm sorry, is
and
any of
saying it
this
was his.
corroborated by anyone? Like, is this because this now, when you said the twin, there's a Lifetime movie I saw where there was like a guy who was meeting women and scamming, and he
And his
had a
twin was in
twin.
on it. Yeah.
Yeah, and it just now I'm like, that's weird. I hope that
No,
she's not from.
the twin said his brother was shit and was like, he ain't to be trusted. I've had to, put out restraining orders on him. He's lied and said
Oh.
me sometimes and okay. It was a mess, girl. But anyway, recent tea.
Oh my
So girl,
goodness.
we wish you the best. I hope you get this car. She wanted this dream car. She wanted all it. He just lied about everything, girl. So I hope she gets what she needs
Did
in the
he
end.
end up like, did she have savings that he drained and stuff like that? Or it wasn't like
Oh yeah,
that?
she
They
did.
just
I mean,
waste her time.
he used a substantial amount of her money because they were trying to get a house and
My
stuff.
God.
And the house never came through.
Oh,
Never.
because he was saying he's taking the money to make down payment, but taking it.
Girl, the house never came through. She never got the
And this
house.
is
She
also
got
an
the
important
car.
lesson. Now, this is me saying it, of course, without really having, seen it myself, but the whole he was able to take her money and down payment and all that. This just isn't a reminder of why women need to really be aware of what's going on with the financial side of their marriage. Because I say that from personal experience, having been with someone, my husband of over a decade, and I let him take the lead on those things because he's the provider and I like a provider. And you can let your husband provide and lead and all of those things, but we still need to know, like, what the bills are, what he's paying, how much they are, how to do it. My ex-husband didn't scam me or anything, but what happened was after we separate, well, first of all, I was afraid to separate and divorce for so long because I really had never lived independently. And I was nervous at the thought of paying my own bills. And it's so silly, bright woman PhD. But I was like, I've never paid Con Ed. I've never paid water. I've never done, all I've ever paid was like my personal credit cards and bought groceries. So I was kind of afraid to step out on my own. And I think there's no reason why he should have been able to take her money and say he's making a down payment on this or that. Why weren't you in those
Exactly.
meetings? Why weren't you,
I'm a
was it a shared
girl.
checking? You just wrote him a check. You just trusted what he said. Come on now.
I don't know where that level of trust is, but
You can't blindly let your partner lead like that. You need to know what's going on too, ladies.
again,
And I'm talking to myself too.
so many women get caught up in this whole kind of Judeo-Christian idea of what men and husbands and
Their role
should
and our
be, and
role.
and even the most independent, wealthy woman will just let men take over. You know what I'm
Because it
saying?
feels good to not have to think and use our brain and be like, you
Yeah.
got it. And if you have a man who's an honest, genuine, trustworthy man, you can do that. But it's, I feel like it's just naive. Because if he,
It's
God
rare.
forbid, something happens to him tomorrow, then suddenly you're a widow and you don't even know what's the website to pay this bill or what that. So you just got to know, ladies, we got to, he can be the leader and he can take the lead on it, but we have to know kind of what's happening. Know the passwords
Exactly.
and know the, we just can't. Oh man, oh man.
Exactly. So bless you, Risa Tisa,
Yeah.
whatever your name is. And you
Yeah.
know what's even more disturbing is she didn't use any names or anything like that. But yet and still people done found out who the man is, what is all
Yeah.
that. Because you left breadcrumbs, girl. Like you left
Yeah.
the I'm not getting on the internet telling people my story like this. I'm just not
Right.
gonna do that.
Yeah.
God forbid something happened. I'm not gonna be like, well, he did it, he did it. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing
Yeah.
it. But
Yeah.
people are like, well, she shouldn't have talked about it if she didn't want us to find out who he was. And that's not how that works. You know what I'm saying? That's not how that
Yeah.
works at all.
Yeah.
She said she didn't want y'all
Yeah.
harassing him and all that stuff. She's thinking about now
Is he
moving.
on social media or he done made all his stuff private and stuff?
I don't know. She met him through Facebook dating. And she said she had kind of a disastrous first date. Where
With
her
him
car,
or somebody else?
no, with him, the car, her tire blew out, and they were supposed to meet at like Cheesecake Factory, and at Perimeter, which they're in Atlanta, so the Perimeter Mall, which is a ways away from where she is, but it was kind of a central location,
I see.
and so her tire blew out on the highway. He came, he changed her tire, he bought her a new tire, so she thought to herself, oh my God, this guy is,
Yeah, he did everything
something,
right. That sounds so
yeah.
nice.
And then, they went up and they begged. And he was just kind of like spilling her guts. He basically was like love bombing her very, very early. And
Yeah. And when you haven't been in a relationship in a while, that love bombing feels so good.
you thinking this is real and
Yeah.
everything.
I finally met my guy, my person. Yeah.
Yep. And so she got fooled by the love bombs. And he was basically putting her through the ringer and acting like he, at one point in the story, she says he acted like he was disabled. He couldn't move. He started peeing in like old Powerade jars and not going to the
Oh my
bathroom.
God.
Girl, it was a mess. But anyway, I'm
That's
saving you the
terrible.
trouble of not going through and listening to it.
Yeah,
So
because I'm like, when
you
I
ain't got
saw that it
to.
was over 50 videos, I said, oh
Oh.
my God, is this how I want to spend my life? Because I could
No,
have
you
spent the whole
don't.
weekend
No,
catching
you
up,
don't.
but I felt
No, you don't.
like, okay, good.
No, you
Because the
don't.
other
No, you
woman
don't.
whose husband was having the affair at the airport and all that stuff, at least hers was like a two or th it was like a three or
I
four part
took
series.
like three
That,
videos. She was done.
yeah, then a little follow-up because people were like, well, you were the other woman, and then she cleared it up. I wasn't really the other woman. He said blah 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 blah. But yeah, that wasn't overwhelming. That just took me like an hour to kind of be caught up. So
Yeah,
this was
this is
like,
gonna take
Lord.
you all day, and you don't need that.
It's
You
like
don't
if
need
you
that.
away from social media for a day or two, or you don't go on your little shade room or whatever your little news source is, you just fall so behind. Because by the time I found out, she was already like 30, 40 videos in. And I said, well, my dog, I don't
No,
know.
you didn't need to do. I saved you the trouble,
I
girl.
appreciate that. And for anyone else listening who wanted to know the story, that's it.
That's it. He got scammed and he was a scammer.
Oh gosh.
The end.
Too much.
The
Too many
end.
scammers out there. The rest of the, I feel like romance in the news this week was very slow. A couple of little small things that if you care, I didn't about this story, but I'm going to share it in case folks did. Larsa Pippen, the ex-wife of Scottie
Oh,
Pippen.
yeah.
So she is a Real Housewife of Miami. I don't watch that particular franchise, but this past season, her storyline was that she was dating Marcus Jordan, the son of Michael Jordan. So Larsa is 49 and Marcus is 33. So I'm all for an age gap relationship, but this one always just seemed off. People really didn't
I think
believe
that's
it. They
off.
always
Isn't that off
felt,
because she'd seen this boy when he was a child?
and that's so gross. Obviously, like he's in the basketball world, like her ex-husband, and Michael Jordan is more her peer. So it's just the whole thing was weird. People were kind of like, for her, very obviously, they felt it was a storyline. You know, when you're on the Housewives, either you should be married or dating someone seriously. People tend to feel afraid that they're going to lose their spot if they're not in a relationship. So made sense for her to kind of bring this young man on and have this controversial storyline. People really couldn't understand what Marcus Jordan's angle was like, does he just genuinely like this woman? You know, he obviously doesn't need the money, so kind of like, I don't even think he needs the attention. So it was kind of like he might really like her. But then when the season wrapped up and the reunion aired, they pretty much broke up like a day or two later. She was posting like those cryptic, very giving, very much high school, like about the relationship being over and you waste your time and you can't be with someone and you trust them and you have your kids around them and you talk to them and they're not who you think they
Lord.
are. And like posts like, you know, I have a question. Let's do a poll. When you and your partner break up, you know, should your friends remain friends with them and keep following them, or should your friends not be friends? So it was just a bunch of
Is she
foolishness.
really
So
49 years old?
almost 50 child. So yeah.
Acting like this?
Yeah, it was just so, it was giving very much, it was very juvenile. But and then just recently, as in like today and yesterday, they were out spotted together. TMZ captured them holding hands, hugged up. So it's like, what's really going on, y'all? You know, like Marcus, you like part of this foolishness, this roller coaster. So that's so silly. So my initial reporting of this was they aren't engaged anymore. It's broken up, and now they appear to be back together. So best of luck to you, Larsa and Marcus Jordan, if this is what you want. You know,
What
Marcus,
does he
I
do
don't think
for
he
a
has children
living?
yet. I don't know that she can give you children if that's important to you. Oh, the whole thing's a mess. She has children with Scotty. So yeah, Marcus, what are we doing here? But yeah, that's Larsa and Marcus. And other reality news, since I've already started with reality news, we have Portia, formerly
Oh,
Portia
girl.
Williams, now Gwabadia. So she announced recently in a really cute Instagram post that she is returning to Real Housewives of Atlanta. As you guys know, or maybe you don't, you know, they were reportedly doing this big cast shakeup and kind of changing things around because people have felt like the past few seasons were very dry, with the current cast, and that they aren't all friends. And so people have been wanting something fresh and new. Candy announced she's leaving. A couple of other ones aren't returning. And Portia just announced that she is going to be returning, Portia Gwabadia. And of course, she will be on there alongside Simon, and they appear to be so happily married and in love. But unfortunately, very recently, news emerged that Simon is a scammer and he's not this Nigerian millionaire businessman that we all thought he was and stuff like that. You know, apparently, he's not a US citizen yet. He's been trying, but it's been denied, reportedly, allegedly, due to some legal problems where he had to leave the country because he was scamming and stealing and wheeling and dealing. And supposedly, he doesn't have the wealth that he claimed. And the whole thing just got really convoluted and ridiculous. People are speculating that the story was leaked right before, you know, right after her announcement to give her a storyline. But I don't know that she would want to be a part of that kind of storyline. That's not a
I
good
don't think so
storyline.
either. And
And
plus,
her
she's like,
storyline was enough that she's returning after the little, you know, drama with supposedly stealing Fallon's husband. And it turned out that really wasn't the case because Fallon was doing her own thing. So, yeah, that to me would have been enough. We want to see you happy and co-parenting with Dennis and raising his her kid, your child. And his. It's a shame that this suddenly got messy and sordid.
I
But I'm,
agree.
yeah, since
I think.
filming's just starting, they have time to capture the rumors and stuff. So.
I think they definitely did that for
The storyline element. That's just
storyline.
such a terrible thing. Like, I don't know. Like, they're saying that Simon's not really a wealthy millionaire. Like, that wedding was just so luxurious and
So
gorgeous. And
luxurious.
oh, it just make you want to just find your own chocolate, Mr. Chocolate African man. It was just so beautiful. All of the outfits and the
Portia
gowns
was
and the oh,
stunning. She was
stunning. And her
stunning.
outfit changes and just so traditional. I just, you know, Nigerians know they have money, they have wealth, they have opulence. That's why it was not surprising that she'd met him and he's this businessman who's successful. There are so many of them successful bitch men. So anyway, child, I guess that'll play out in this upcoming season, and stuff like that. So it did things took a turn. So this should be interesting. And then finally, in a very kind of little sweet little burgeoning friendship or romance or whatever it is, you know. Diddy, we don't talk about him much here in terms of romance and his obviously his scandals, but you know, his children, they're innocent. So he has one daughter, not the twins, but Chance Combs. She's the daughter of Sarah Chapman, who was always like just a friend to Diddy, but I guess they also friendship crossed over. So anyway, one of the mothers of his children. So Chance, who is now 18, she may be dating Branson Bailey, who's 19, and he's the younger brother of Chloe and Halle Bailey. There was a cute little video of them. Yeah, it was on Valentine's Day. And it looked like their own home video. Just a cute little video of them, like at one of their houses, like innocently kind of just talking and doing some little handshake and playing. And like, I think he got her some Valentine's stuff. So it was just like really, really cute and sweet. They're young, they're babies. So, you know, maybe they like each other. Maybe they just know each other from that celebrity circle. But, you know, maybe they're dating, but, you know, at their ages, I'm sure they probably are just going to be going to college or whatever they're doing. But it just was very sweet, very wholesome looking. Chance is a sweet girl. You never hear about her. You know, she's young, but sometimes at 17, 18, they're already in the blogs and stumbling out the club drunk and all this stuff. You know, Chance and the girls, the twins, you never hear of those types of things. So seems like they have some solid parenting that's taking place. And so yeah, it was a very, very cute little thing. And so yeah, whatever they have going on, I wish them the best of luck. It was just very adorable. Just don't get too serious too soon, y'all, and stuff like
Yeah,
that.
they're
But
young, because
we
how old is Chance now?
Chance is 18 and he's 19. So it's very age
Okay, age
appropriate and stuff.
appropriate, okay,
Because I
good,
have to look up his age. He looks like a baby, but you know, black don't brat sometimes.
yeah,
Like he could have been like 23, 24, and I would have felt like, But I
yeah.
love that they're 18 and 19. It's just,
Oh,
it's
that's
super
good,
cute.
that's cute.
It is. I like the Bailey family, and no matter how people feel about them or whatever. So,
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, the rumor is, speaking of the Baileys, the rumor is Hallie is actually married to that guy, DDG.
DDG. Well,
Allegedly, yeah,
how old is
allegedly.
Hallie and DDG? They're in their 20s, like mid
Yeah,
20s.
20s.
Well, go ahead and be married then if that's what y'all want. I mean,
Yeah, that's what y'all
you know,
want.
she's private. She's shown us that she can keep things to her chest and quiet, and that's fine. So maybe they are.
Even though we all knew you was pretty girl on
It
YouTube.
right. Come on now. Yeah, right.
Your
I
nose
just hope
straight across
he
your
is.
face.
Yeah, remember how we thought Keke Palmer's ex-fiance was this sweet, wholesome, nice guy, and then he showed his true color. Usher was the one who kind of brought out that, because that was when she was going to the Usher concert, and that was when he first showed who he was, making them comments about be a wife or be a mother or whatever, about how she was dressed and acting. So yeah, he up to that point, he was kind of quiet in the background, and I thought he was just such a nice little husband, fiance, whatever. But anyway, so yeah, maybe if her and DDG might be married. I kind of hope they aren't, but you know, whatever. It is what it is. So that's it, y'all, for Hot Topics.
All right, you guys, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back with an interview with an author that I got to meet over the weekend at Let's Love Y'all Fest, Tanvir Peart, and we're going to talk about her debut novel, The 7 Month Itch. So you all sit back, relax, and you all come back and listen to this interview with Tanvir Peart. Hi everyone, welcome to this episode of Romance and Color. I am here with an author that I just met over the weekend at the Atlanta Love Y'all Fest. I had the pleasure of meeting her for the first time, and we're doing an interview now, but it is author Tanvir Peart. Tanvir, how are you?
I'm blessed and five highly favored tonight. How are you?
I'm awesome. Good to see you again. Like I said, I just mentioned that we were both at the Love Y'all Fest in Atlanta, the inaugural Romance Book Festival. I think we can both say we both had a good time. Meeting like authors and seeing, our colleagues in the industry and stuff like that. I thought it was super, super cool. Before we get started, what was the one thing that you like really loved about the festival and stuff? What were some takeaways for you?
I mean, just being in space with y'all, especially being a debut indie author, where I feel like the only people who know me are my husband, my mama, and my daddy, and my kids. It was very surreal. No,
That's
it is, but it is
true.
what it is. It's very surreal to be in space with folks, yourself included, whose books I have on my shelves, in the author space. So that was wonderful. And just like the bookish community really showed up and showed out. So it was a good time with good weather.
Yeah, it was an awesome time. With fickle weather, it was like warm one day, then cold the next.
Listen,
But
it's still warmer than Buffalo, so
that's Atlanta for you. I have to tell you, wait 20 minutes and the weather gonna change. But anyway, Tom, tell us about yourself. And the question that I ask everybody when they first come on the podcast is, when did you first fall in love with romance? Can you tell me like a book, a time, a place, an author that you like made you really fall in love with romance?
Oh wow. So I still am very much a new kid on the block when it comes to reading romance and also writing it. So I didn't come into the community until late 2020. My day job is in public policy. I'm doing a lot of advocacy for legislation at the state level in New York State, and it was therapy that brought me into the space. I'm a Black woman in particular. It was during, like, after the uprising and things, and I'm an empath. And so she was like, you need to heal yourself. So I'm trying to remember, like, my first book I read, but Christina C. Jones is one person who was a part of the introduction, Kennedy Ryan, and some others. And so that happened like December 2020. And then like January 2021, right before I started my final year of grad school, was when I started drafting out the 7 month itch.
Wow. Okay. What made you say I'm gonna go from just learning about romance, sticking my toe in like the romance water to, you know what, I'm gonna draft a whole novel and put it out here? Like, what made you make that transition?
Probably too much wine. But in all but in all seriousness, I've been a cinema girl, and there's always my imagination has always run rampant. And I can remember times when I was writing about like Donald Duck and Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse and stuff when I was younger. But
For whatever reason, I've always had different ideas in my mind, and it wasn't until January 2021 when I finally let them sort of roam free. And so it was a culmination of looking at my husband, thinking, we were together at that time for like a minute, and looking at like a Hallmark commercial, and thinking for like their winter lineup. Like, what would happen if we were on the brink of divorce, but we were forced to be in the same space by happenstance? And so I just think that reading romance unlocked a part of me that's been dormant for so long. And it also inspired something that I didn't know was in me to turn loose. All that to say, wine likely was involved in the process.
Wine was involved. So tell me about who Tanvier was before she found romance. Like, where'd you grow up? What were you into before then? I know you're from Baltimore, so but I'm probably saying it wrong, but Baltimore. So tell me about what young Tanvier was like, and what did she read when she was young?
I'm thinking of those American Girl books, like the Dear
Mm-hmm.
Addie and the Dear, I'm aging myself, but like them Dear Addie and Dear Molly books before they got like the reprieve. Those are books that I read. I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings with Maya Angelou comes to mind. Lord of the Flies, which might be, I don't know if there's like a psychopath version, like portion of myself that I'm telling on myself. But Tavie back in the day is, she was in, I guess it's safe to say now, like an extroverted introvert. I've always been sort of like the, my friends used to call me like the Sinclair James. Shout out to Living Single, of the good, the woo-woo-woo, and just like the bouncy, the colorful person. But also, like, also, reserved. I grew up as a church girl. Not necessarily that that put restrictions on me, but I never sort of like allowed my mind to wander into certain spaces. And again, it wasn't a restriction that was put on me, but just sort of how I was. So, Tommy was out there and bubbly. I think that's a safe word, but also a little bit reserved.
Reserved.
In real life and growing up, and romance definitely flipped the switch on that real quick.
So you so one day you're drinking wine, you're watching Hallmark, you're looking at your husband, and you're like, look, I'm gonna write this romance. What? And you said the inspiration was, what if we were divorcing, but we had to be forced to be together? Like, where else did you what was that first draft like of putting this together? And what did you think was gonna happen with it after you finished it? Were you like, I'm gonna self-publish it? What are you gonna do with it?
Yeah, so that first draft was real rough with a capital R, and allow that tongue to purr. It took 3 weeks to write the very first rough draft of the 7 month itch, because I just let my mind be free without thinking about like conventions or anything, just to put stuff on the page. And honestly speaking, I didn't know that it was going to turn into an actual book. I just knew that there were, some characters in my head that were dancing around, and I needed to like let them out and let them loose. And so, I mean, like doing the math from January 2021 to January 2024, when the book actually came out, it's been some time, and I shelved it just because I never saw myself necessarily in the author space. And I just thought, oh, this is something that is therapeutic for me, because the day job is so heavy. We're talking about real lives and real policy that can impact generations, either breaking curses or establishing them. And I it was something that I look forward to, but again, not something that I necessarily thought I would put into the world. And it took my own little cinnamon roll of a husband to say, you wrote this thing, so why not look at the avenue to put it out there? And for me, I like the freedom and flexibility of the indie author space. I recognize the work that goes into that across the board. Because even
Yeah.
trad published people still have to make a dollar out of 15
Oh,
cents.
absolutely.
100%.
Absolutely.
But with indie authors, you don't have the backing of like a top five or even like mid-level publisher. And so there's a lot of anonymity that comes with that. And like, how do you sort of break the plane? And so a good portion of the journey was just researching who's out there. And how do I even attempt to sort of like navigate this realm that I am still being introduced to with the reading? So that's why there was sort of like a year's delay, a number of years delay, because I had to like get the graduate school degree, still doing the policy, being mama and all that stuff, trying to be a decent wife, and still trying to like navigate, okay, well, how do you get from point A to B?
So for you, basically, writing was, as my friend Em said, it's more bibliotherapy for you. And looking at romance as a type of bibliotherapy to kind of get you through the things, the rough things that you were handling in your day job. And I can see how romance as an escape, as a way to, always have a guaranteed happily ever after
Yeah.
is something that would be quite, therapeutic. But as a writer, romance is about the conventions and about learning the tropes and conventions and things. Walk me through how you, during the time the book came, you first drafted it to the time it came out. Did you become a student of romance? Did you kind of learn the tropes and the conventions and things like that? And was like, okay, well, what is this book really? Like, because you have to, when somebody asks you, what are the tropes? What's in this book? You have to define it. So talk to me about that kind of process and what you kind of did to kind of become a student of romance as you work through this book.
Yeah, so a lot of it I learned through, the University of Google and like reading different books about beats and conventions. But a big portion of it was just reading authors who I adored and just questioning what was it about their storytelling that drew me to them. Because there are traditional, romantic beats, if you will, in conventions. But the storytelling varies, and certain people's work hit different. And so I found myself gravitating to certain authors with, how do they craft their internal dialogue versus their regular dialogue? I know that like world building is a big thing when it comes to like romanticy or romantic fantasy stories, but I really appreciate, not navigating and necessarily a white box when it comes to contemporary romance. And back before policy, I was sort of like the Carrie Bradshaw in the interior decorating world, which is why in a lot of my books, I do look to a lot of like interior decorative touches to sort of incorporate because I appreciate certain details with world building. But it was a lot of reading, just of, I guess, the references to, if you want to get the technical aspects down, but also just like really diving into a lot of authors who I adore and continue to adore, and when it comes to like, how they create an escape, and when you get lost in it and you lose track of time, like not everybody's writing hits that way. And I really tried to immerse myself in folks who would provide that escape so I could try and duplicate it in a way that was like authentic to myself.
Your personal life seems like extremely busy with policy and writing. So I know you said you let it sit on the shelf for a minute. What made you pick it back up, and how did you balance your rigorous kind of schedule, wife, mom, policymaker, to having a writing schedule? And what did that look like, kind of crafting this book?
Yeah, so my husband gave me a kick in the butt, and shout out to him because he is my little quiet king, where I'm very like type A, and he is, I don't want to say he's a beta because when the lights are low and the bedroom door is closed, it's something different. But he knows how to lead in a way where I can follow. And it was him who ultimately like bigged me up to say, try. Because the worst thing that will happen is you just keep this, and there are probably people who want to read it. And so that helped to inspire me. And I don't know, as far as when it comes to like my therapist said I have high functioning anxiety, so this is where I shine. I love I thrive in the chaos. I try to keep it organized as a Virgo. And for me, I don't set limitations or certain expectations on myself, especially with like the type of work I do. I stop around 5:30, but like as you know, in the indie author space, you're the hype person, the marketing person,
Absolutely.
you're the social media guru. You still got to write the book, and you got to do all these 52 million extra things because you are the team until you're able, hopefully to get to a place to build it. And so just recognizing that, like when I write daily, it's only for a few hours a night. I don't have a specific word count because I'll say, well, I'll give myself X amount of months to get the manuscript done, and then like this amount of time for the edits. And I typically edit as I go. So just giving myself the grace to operate in the real world, where maybe one night, I'll do like 2,000 words, but maybe one night I'll have a pair. It's gonna be a damn good paragraph, but maybe all I have is the paragraph. And so just finding out a process that works for me, that holds space and grace for if you get dealt a curveball, and not beating yourself up for not hitting expectations that you set in place that could have been gray and not black and white.
Yeah, that's great advice. I have to agree with you. Like, it doesn't matter what the word count is. I usually don't really set word counts either. I do have a set time when I write. So, in the evening, like you have a little one, you have to deal with the little people, and then your husband, and then once they're put to bed, from 8 to maybe 11, I'm writing or whatever. And after that, it's bedtime. We start all over again. So I'm not really a count person because a lot of writing is not writing. A lot of writing is thinking. A lot of writing is thinking about writing. A lot of writing is researching. So you can be spending hours researching and things like that. So with the 7 month itch, how much of writing was researching for you? Because you are married, you're not divorced, girl. You're not going through a divorce. So where did you kind of get some of the research and inspiration for this particular book?
So the inspiration came from just it's a winter setting in Vail, Colorado. And I think the Vail aspect I might have pulled out my butt, because I know people know of Aspen, and I'm not a skiing person. I'm the black person that stays at home in the house with the hot cocoa. God bless y'all if y'all on them skis. But just like researching the area, there's a certain like je ne sais quoi, if you will, about Vail, Colorado. And but also creating a fictitious space, like the ravine, the resort where it's located, is a place of imagination and not necessarily a destination. And then as far as the characters, I kind of knew sort of the skeletal structure or like the outline of who they were. I knew that Justice was going to be a flight instead of fight girl. I knew that Terrence was going to be a prominent sort of like presence in person and very attractive, but also, raised by his mom. And so he had like, soft sides to him. And so I had ideas where the characters were talking to me and just trying to sort of roadmap what it would look like. With the 7 month itch, since neither of the main characters technically filed for divorce, there wasn't a lot of research into that. But how can I craft real folks who are fictitious and put them in a situation that would naturally cause chaos if it was real life, but get them to their happily ever after in a place that wasn't watered down but dealt with some rifting.
So this is a sort of a second chance romance between a couple who is on the, they're not divorced like she said, but they're on the brink of divorce, and then they end up at the same single retreat, which is wild. That's just a wild, in Vail, Colorado, which is wild. It's forced proximity. You got some good ones in here. Forced proximity. You got, second chance. You got, marriage in disarray. You got all kind of stuff going on in here, which I think is like, it's tropes on tropes on tropes, which is good. I like a book that's full of tropes. So that's what I mean, I just do. I like a book that's full of tropes.
You got hexes popping up.
XL, yeah, I forgot about that shit. X is popping up. And X is putting a monkey wrench in things and trying to decide between, it's not really a love triangle, like a love square. So what were some of like the most difficult scenes for you to write? And what were those moments like where you were just like, I don't know where to go from here. How did you kind of like work your way through that?
Yeah, so I wanted to, obviously it's fiction, but I wanted it to be real. And I think at face value, there is, in my mind, because I've been with my husband for 16 years total. It'll be 12 years married on paper, this April. So we lean real into like Black love. But I think for me, there is a misconception. I will only speak from my perspective. That if you've been with somebody for that long, even if you're separated, you just will naturally gravitate toward each other. You'll communicate perfectly. And whatever problem that you had that separated y'all, where you didn't see or hear from the person for 7 months, will naturally dissolve. And that's not real life to me. There were some things that happened outside of the book. Between these characters that made justice feel like staying was not conducive to a safe space for her, in a sense, like mentally speaking, because none of that stuff happened. This ain't no dark romance. This ain't no dark romance. Here's the cinnamon roll. But like navigating that, and I knew automatically, like off the rip, that miscommunication was going to play a major factor because they loved each other. They knew how to speak each other's love languages until they couldn't. And so what happens when you put real characters in a real situation and it's go time? And again, it's not going to be instant communication. I mean, there's going to be people who are guarded. There's questions about like trust, and just leaning into that and knowing that like you're going to have to take it there, and that because of that, some people will resonate with the book, and then some people might be like, I don't want to deal with all that. That's why I say it's a roller coaster of shenanigans, because I know folks in my real life who have navigated not necessarily the same thing, but different situations where the communication wasn't there, and they might have wanted to bop each other over the head with the skillet. So how do you put that to the page? And just trying to be authentic to the characters that were created, and not necessarily like what Tom VA would do.
True, true. Because you have to kind of separate yourself from the work when you, even though it's your work, you have to separate yourself from, try to separate yourself from the characters, because the characters are their own independent thing going on, and not really insert yourself into what you necessarily want the characters to do, because that muddies the narrative in a lot of ways. So this, like you said, this features the Black couples and things like that, and this is a Black romance. how do you define what do you define as Black romance, for one, and two, what did you want to pull what in terms of like cultural storytelling via romance? Because I feel like there's cultural storytelling. We all insert, even I just talked about not inserting yourself. When we're writing, we can't help but put some of our cultural context when we're writing. So in terms of that, how did you kind of interweave that into the romance, your own cultural context, and how you define what Black romance is?
Well, Black romance to me is a story written by a Black author. Let's start there, because I know, I'm gonna keep it cute, but some some alabaster people want to try and tell stories, and that's not Black romance, sis.
It's not.
But to me, Black romance is a Black story that centers Black love between Black main characters. And so for me, how I show up is I'm a Black woman. My husband is first generation Afro-Panamanian. And for me, Black romance extends across the diaspora. So one thing I wanted to try to do with the 7 month itch and with some of the other things that are coming down the pipeline is broaden our concept of Blackness. So it's not exclusively on the Black American born in the United States experience. Like Terrence is from Newark, because I actually knew some people from Newark. Like he's based on some real folks who I was knowing growing up. He is Afro-Dominican. There is elements of colorism, which is, it's across the board, like in Black American culture, in Latine culture. It's something that my husband, like his family experienced, because he is a well-melanated chocolate man. Praise God. Just delicious. I'm gonna keep it cute. So I wanted to try and put those dynamics in for representation. And I will say that I personally want to pull in things from lived experience. So the Afro-Dominican element, like I actually grew up around people who were Dominican or like identified specifically as Afro-Dominican because of the colorism. The ties to the Bronx and also Newark was very intentional, because I've had family who grew up in South Bronx. And because of that, like my interactions growing up as a girl, even from Baltimore, like being around even like those different cultures of like New York City, and sort of like the interweaving of Latine and Black identities. And so for me, I wanted to celebrate all the complexities and flavors or sabor of all of that, and sort of bring it to the page in a way that was authentic to me. So I'm not just deciding, oh, I want to have representation that might be out of my own experience, and let me just pull from the internet. But like Terrence isn't based, for example, even Miles too, like they're not based off of one or two people. They're based off of, a mixture of folks who I've had the pleasure of interacting with as I've grown up. And it's to hold space. My next book, which is a divorce rom-com, again deals with like Black Americans, but the male main character's mom is from Haiti. And so like sort of giving a little bit of flavor to that, in honor of like many friendships I've had with folks who are Haitian American, where their parents might be from Haiti. So just trying to mix it up, but for me, from a place of lived experience, where I'm not necessarily like pulling it out of a hat, but I'm honoring like relationships and friendships that I've had along the way that help shape who I am, and trying to translate it into whatever work I'm working on.
Got it. So, how did publishing your very first novel change your attitude or perception of like the self-publishing industry? Like, what did you learn? What's the biggest lesson that you learned thus far?
God, that you have to believe in yourself and go out there and big yourself out. The best cheerleader you have is yourself. I figured that the process was going to be tedious, but it is one thing to research and read articles and even talk to like other indie authors, but it is another thing to put on the shoes and try and strut down the street because again, you have to make a dollar out of 15 cents. And while that could be a testimony across the board, if you're hybrid or trad, there is something specific and unique about indie authors who don't have that backing, especially if that's going to be sort of like your arena in the debut space. And it forced me to think outside of a box while trying to navigate and understand and learn parameters that I wasn't privy to before because I wasn't in the space. So the plus side is you can have a imagination and try and like throw stuff at the wall to see what sticks. One of the things I did with the 7 month itch, because again, who knew me? Over the summer, I had a book cover reveal party up here. I'm in the Buffalo area now. And I intentionally invited bookish influencers and shout out to Book Talk Buffalo. They do like a monthly book club sort of service. And that brought together like close to 20 people, where it wasn't just about me, it was sort of like building your community. And so trying to figure out ways to immerse yourself into a community, recognizing that the biggest competition you have isn't with a fellow indie author because there is like a sisterhood or community there, but it's with yourself. While also trying to figure out what are some ways that you can try and get your name out there. So sky is the limit because you are essentially your own publisher. So you have final say over things, but you also have final say over things. So if they don't work, it was on you. If it does, you know, praise God. So just trying to, I stumbled across the way and I'm still learning. But taking risk and having a willingness to put yourself out there is a very scary reality that you have to navigate as an indie author because you are the publisher. So you have no choice but to do
Absolutely, you do.
it.
I'm a everything. So did you do the cover yourself? Did you do the editing yourself? So was it 100% on you, or did you outsource some things?
Oh, I outsource because I know my limitations. One of the things I learned real quick and as from the consumer perspective is your cover has to be good. And so it would have looked like a Pinterest board if I attempted. And I did, I got Canva Pro like the next person. And before I hired my cover designer, I just wanted to play around with things. Cause again, Virgo, Mrs. Fix It want to do it all. And I knew I was going to have a cover designer, but whew, if I would have had the little bootleg cover that I had on Canva, not one person would have bought that book. Editing, I come from a little bit of an editing background. I was a deputy editor for a mom's digital space, Cafe Mom, for a number of years, but also recognizing that editing for a book is extremely different
Very
than
different,
like editing for an article. And so I went through Reedsy and thankfully it worked out. I outsourced for the cover designer and also for editors. And thankfully those relationships have been extremely beautiful where I'm going to them again for like other projects and works, but definitely outsourced. As much as I can. The social media stuff, that's my shenanigans. Again, throwing stuff to the wall to see what fits or what sticks. But like editors and cover, I did not play around with that. So we got the professionals.
So have I know you're still, as you say, you're fairly new and you're getting to know people. I feel like you have like integrated yourself well into the community, particularly other writers of color. People know who you are, stuff like that. How have the community of other writers, particularly other writers of color, been integral in helping you, particularly this debut year for you?
It feels like coming home, and I know how cheesy that sounds. I think of two folks in particular that come to mind, Jael Seegers. During my book launch, I did work with or I do work with Good Girls PR, and shout out to them for setting up a lot of lives. And Jael Seegers and Natasha Bishop was one that I will never forget. Jael, if you listen to this, you owe me therapy money still for revive me and restore me, ma'am. We've spoken
She old for
about this.
everybody,
She
girl.
owe everybody and chocolate. Also thinking about Nikki Payne too, because we did something virtual with Alexa Martin for during my release week, and those are DM slides. And so I just it's I would say, especially with Black women authors, and that's no disrespect to anybody else, but there is something to be said about the community and the table that is created in an equitable way, even with like this Love Y'all Book Fest. For whatever reason, I got a invite out to dinner where I'm looking at like Natalie Kanya, I'm looking at Nikki Payne, I'm next to like even Fallon Ballard, like what? And
Like,
just hear
how
Denise
are
Williams, what?
you?
So it's just it's it I it obviously I'm stuttering. It's left me speechless to be in, and even like meeting you, like it's left me speechless to be in the presence of people who have provided joy in times where you might be triggered, and to be a part of that community where folks intentionally and authentically look out for each other because we care about everybody securing the bag. This isn't a scarcity mindset, and it's all of us coming together to say we can all shine and create some really amazing things. And so I'm still in awe, and I think that's the part I have to get used to, because yeah, I have a book out, but it still doesn't click when I'm among other authors who have been doing this for much longer, that I am a part of that space, but they've been extremely welcoming, and it's been an honor and a privilege to be in space.
That's wonderful. That is so beautiful and wonderful. You're right. Romance is a place where, well, first of all, we always say romance is for everybody, and we really mean that because we want to see happily ever afters happen for everybody. And that means authors too. We want you to get your money. We want you to get your readers. We want you to have people who, are reading your work. And we always, I'm quick to slide in another author's DM and be like, girl, I read this, so and so and so and so. This is crazy, whatever. I'm always quick to do that. And I'm always surprised at the authors who slide in my DM and be like, what you keep posting stuff, what is this about? Blah blah blah. So it is a wonderful community. So we're almost at the end, and so I'm gonna ask you a few rapid fire questions. They're just fun, quick, little interactive, get to know you type stuff. So, their first thing that comes to your head, questions. So, your favorite book as a kid? I think you said it, the Addie books.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there was another one. I used to have like those little random Disney books that you would get from like they didn't have Walmarts like that back in the day, but like from Kmart's and James Way. I'm aging myself. But like them little Disney books that was based off. I watched a lot of movies and went to the theater with my dad, and I probably saw every Disney movie as much as possible while sneaking in Burger King foods and drink with overcoats. But yeah, those Dear Addie books are also something special.
You like writing heroes or villains? You don't really have any villains in your book, but
Yeah, I don't know if I'll ever write Well, actually, maybe I'll write a morally gray person, but I love a cinnamon roll, because they could be grumpy, they could be happy, they could be souped up on happiness and be a golden retriever. So I think I'm always going to write the hero.
Okay. Do you write like writing love scenes or dramatic arguments?
Ooh, I like writing love scenes because I'm kind of, behind closed doors with my husband, that's a different situation, but I. The organizing justice in my 7 month itch like color codes her panty drawer and is like very Tamara Mowry in real life. That's me. But when you write them scenes, I feel like there is some liberation that happens. And so I love writing love scenes.
Where's your favorite place to write?
This is going to be very random, but we have a couch and a love seat downstairs, and I love writing. I write by hand, so don't judge me, in a composition notebook. And I have like a little lap desk, and I love writing with a big blanket on the sofa, or the love seat, sorry, with some noise canceling headphones, and that's my spot. So not a desk, the love
Okay.
seat.
Okay. Okay, you mentioned noise canceling headphones. Are you listening to music? If so, what kind of music are you listening to?
Sometimes I do, like I might try and kill two birds with one stone with thinking about a playlist. So Snow, that playlist, a lot of Sade, like a Jodeci playlist. I love Jodeci. Anthony Hamilton, Jill Scott, Erykah Badu.
Okay. Neo soul. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Book reviews, do you read them or not read them?
I don't, so I'll go to different places just to like check, but I don't necessarily read individual reviews. I am curious, and the Virgo in me is always so self-critical. I'm always curious if people will have the same critiques that I have for myself.
Okay, you're braver than I am.
I know I need to, but I've been staying out recently, so that's been, I guess,
That's good.
healthier.
That's good. What is the last romance novel that you read?
Oh my gosh, what is the last romance novel that I read? Oh my goodness. Now I need to cheat. I read I think it was Kimberly Lemming's now I'm looking it up, so I am cheating. The Day I Got Drunk and Needed a Love Potion at a Werewolf.
That's a good one. Is there a favorite word that you use in your writing that comes up a lot?
Trying to make sure my kids up aren't up here. I'm going back to like the intimate scenes. I love when a guy is like, I just that is in the writing. Yeah, we're just gonna leave it there.
If your book were to become a movie, who would you want to play the lead?
Okay, so with the 7 month itch, Tamara Mowry, not Tia, and I'm very intentional about Tamara as Justice. There is a guy who used to play for one of the green NFL teams.
Green in effect.
It
Dang,
might have been
Packers.
the Jets. No, it wasn't the Packers. It had to be the Jets. His name is Mikal, like Mykhal. He's mixed. I think he's biracial. But he got a boy. I would want him to be Terrence. Miles would be Trevante Rhodes, and Emma would be Andre Day. So yeah, those folks can play around with each other on screen.
Okay. When it's all said and done, if you've written like 50 books or more, and if they become movies, what do you want readers to say about the books that you've written?
That they were never boring. They were full of drama, and just when folks thought that it was going to end a certain way, I snatched their wig and told them to look somewhere else. But they were a good time that led into a good happily ever after.
Good. Okay. And last question. Where do you see romance novels going in the next like decade? Where would you like to see them going in the next decade?
Oh my. I would love for historically marginalized voices and authors to create their own tables to sit themselves at and to be seen, understood, and better respected. I kind of feel like there have been some strides, but not enough. I also feel like folks are con there's so much great content out there, and there's also, it feels like we're getting to this point, and this is me from my little limited experience, where it's almost like you can't necessarily savor what you're doing because you always have to think about the next thing. And I would love for things to slow down a little bit. And some authors are like this, like, Kennedy Ryan gonna put out something but once a year. But you anticipating that. And so I would love to lean more into like real stories that are thoughtful, and there's so many that are out there, but also like pass the mic because there's so many people who are doing amazing work that aren't getting the flowers that they deserve. And
So
I
true.
feel like in the next decade or so, hopefully as we expand, we'll start to see them shine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're gonna be one of those people who shine, and I already know it.
No.
I already feel it. You got something there worth seeing and reading. So Tom, yeah, I'm so glad you came onto the podcast.
Thank
Tell
you.
us what's next for you. You mentioned this divorce rom-com. I heard it all weekend, but you gotta tell the people what it's really gonna be about. What's the next projects you have, and when can we anticipate this one?
Yeah, so it's a divorce rom-com. I'm gonna release the cover and the title in March. And so
Okay.
I was just about to say it. I was like, let me bring it back. I'm thinking about releasing it on June 18th because we're going to Chocolate City, so Washington, D.C. And just like with Juneteenth, there is an element of liberation. This woman, Ella, is a stay-at-home mom of two who comes home because she leaves a birthday gift and hears her husband upstairs in their marital bed with somebody else who isn't her. So
All done.
she leaves her life of privilege for the unknown, reclaims her time. And maybe she ends up in her best friend's younger brother's bed, who also happens to be a DC bachelor. So there is an age gap. It's a black romance. It's a rom-com. So I'm intentionally trying to be funny, and it's a good time. And that's sort of like a little palate cleanser. The 7 month itch is the book one of a Chance at Love series. Everybody been in my DMs asking for the next one, which they know is Miles Apart, so it follows Miles. And that one I am working on once I get the final edits out for this divorce rom-com, and that one will come out in October of this year. So divorce rom-com in June, Miles Apart, which is sort of like the follow-up to the 7 month itch, both standalones in October of this year.
Wow, you're gonna be working, girl. 3 books in a year. Woo-wee.
I'm gonna try and find my stride, but again, like it's therapy for me. So I love getting lost in a space of play.
Girl, you better. I write so slow. You better than me. I'm still working on stuff. But anyway, where can we find you on social media? Where can people keep up with you and all the things that you have going on and all that good stuff?
Yeah, so there's two me's on social media. If you want the policy me, where I'm the professional agitator, you could go to at Tom V. Pierce on Instagram and Twitter. My Facebook is for my family, so mind your business. But at Tom V. Writes is where you get my romantic shenanigans. So that's on Instagram, TikTok. I'm more active on Threads than I am on Twitter. And I only have a at Tom V. Writes Facebook page because my dad refuses to go to all the social media platforms. So it literally says that in the bio, this is for my dad.
Sweet. Thank you so much, Tanvi, for coming
Thank
on. This
you.
has been amazing. It's been awesome to meet you in person and now talk to you one on one. And I wish you absolutely nothing but success. And I know you're going to go very far. I already see it. This book is, I've been seeing it on social media, girls, taking off. So I wish you nothing but the best.
Thank you so much.
All right, we are back. I hope you all enjoyed my in interview with Tanvier. Again, you can get her new debut novel, The 7 Month Itch. It's available everywhere, including Amazon Prime, and it's also on KU on Kindle Unlimited. So you all check out The 7 Month Itch. I know you all are going to enjoy it. So, Yakini, are you watching anything? All I know is I'm ready for Bridgerton.
Oh my
I'm
goodness.
so ready for season three that it's not even funny. I'm tired of them teasing us. At first, at first
Yeah.
I wasn't feeling it. Remember, I was like,
Same, same.
I don't care nothing about no dang Penelope and Colin. I don't even care. But recently, I saw the two of them on the car on the red carpet. That dang Colin was looking so good. I was like,
So
ooh,
handsome. Oh, he's so handsome.
he was looking good. I said, like, oh, he done got a little buff. They got a little
Yeah.
older. So he's
You
looking
know, I
really
think
good.
Penelope, I forgot why I didn't care about her storyline. I think she did something to piss me off last season.
I mean,
And I
she,
was just
we
like,
know that she's Lady Whistledown. Spoiler
it
alert.
wasn't that. It was something else that she just made me mad. And I just was annoyed with her. And I was like,
Well,
I don't care about her
remember she
story.
snitched on old girl, the black girl.
I think that's what it was. I think
Yeah,
that's
remember
what
she
it was.
snitched
And
on
I
the
kind of
black
lost
girl.
respect for her. I was like, she's whack and I don't care about her storyline.
Yeah.
But suddenly, like you said, the trailer just really kind of reeled me in. And I was like, I can't wait for this story. We need this story. Oh, man. So I'm just so excited. I feel like it's some time away. When is it? Is it May?
May. We have to wait
Yeah.
until the first week of May.
Oh, I
Yeah,
hope the
so
time
it's gonna
goes
be a
by
minute.
fast.
And they're breaking it up in two. So we May, and then they're gonna turn around and do the next part in June. So they're
I
breaking
hate that.
it up.
Like one of
I
their
hate when they
damn
do that.
own break mid-season finale. Because has Bridgerton ever done that before? A mid-season finale
No,
when they're not even.
never.
If it's
Never.
the
They
full
just
amount
ran the
of
season.
if it's the full amount of episodes, then I guess I can't complain because that's almost getting like a twofer. But if they're cutting the episode quantity in half, then I'll be annoyed. You know what I'm saying?
I think they probably would give us like four and four or some shit.
What? That's
Yeah.
trash. Oh
Yeah.
man. I don't like
Yeah, I
that.
don't like that either,
I'm
but I
not
think they're
feeling
gonna do
that.
four and four. And
Yeah.
I mean they kind of did that with The Crown. Like, I don't know if you watched The Crown. I watched the entire season, but they did The Crown, and they did like maybe like six and six, something like that. And so I was like, and the last half was basically about Harry and when he meets Kate and them trying to legitimize, like, Camilla coming to the throne. I wasn't really that interested in that, but I was up until when Diana died, I was invested. So I was just like, girl, I don't like when y'all split up seasons like
I
that.
hate
They
that.
did
I
the
hate
same
that.
thing with Stranger Things. Stranger Things is coming back the same way. I don't like that. I don't like
I
that.
don't think there's any value
Definitely
to
stay
it.
doing
I
it.
don't, I'm just not a fan of that. It's,
Yeah.
I don't know. And I feel like it's probably going to be so good. It's funny because when Gilded Age comes on, I'm like, this is my favorite period, romantic, whatever, scripted series. And then Bridgerton comes on. I'm like, no, I love Bridgerton because, you know, she makes it special because she sprinkles in some modern day stuff and the music's cool. So yeah, I can't wait. I'm a little
I don't
disappointed.
know. I think I mean I because I loved Downton Abbey and the person that produced Downton Abbey does Gilded Age. I think I like Gilded Age more.
Yeah, Gilded
Because
Age plot is just so quality. Oh my God, it's
yes,
so good.
and I think also because we know that Sally Whitfield, Richard
Yes.
Whitfield does the directing and stuff for those episodes, and I
That's
can
so
tell
good.
that she takes such attention to detail that I'm just like, yeah, this is my show. Like I'm seated. When it comes back, don't bother me. I'm just gonna like look,
Yeah.
don't bother me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me watch my show. But the fact that they drop one every week and I don't get tired,
Yeah.
I think I'm over the binging of shows, I think.
Yeah.
Because when you binge and if you don't binge it and then people start talking about it, you're like, damn, dude, I ain't got time to watch it. You
Yeah.
know? So
Yeah.
I'm kind of over the binge model of things. It's like a
Yeah.
book. I want to just take my time and get
Yeah.
into it when I get into it, you
Oh,
know?
so remind so when Bridgerton, oh right, because they is that a Netflix thing? They just air everything at
Yep,
once, right?
Netflix.
And other networks like Hulu and stuff or streaming platforms, they kind of pace it. Yeah, I kind of like the pacing it too, because when it's dropped all at once, you absolutely feel compelled to watch everything. Because when you watch your little recap on whatever podcast, or you, like you said, you get online, people are going to spoil it, so you have no choice. Well, that's that then.
So I'm excited for that. I haven't really been watching anything else. I watched a few things on Lifetime. I think I watched called Love, Lies, and Polygamy. That was crazy. That was crazy about a
That's
polygamist.
a
They were
is that a
black
movie
too,
or is it a
girl.
show? Love,
It was
Lies, and
a movie. They were black too.
I think I might have that DVR. I might have that
Yeah,
DVR.
that was crazy. Watch it if you
Did
get a
you
chance.
watch the Kenya Moore one? It's not a romance one, but the Stolen from the Street or whatever it was called.
No, I didn't watch that one.
Okay, yeah, no, that was good. That's less, again, it's no romance at all. Absolutely not. But I just feel like, as a woman and of a daughter and of kids in general, you know, it's about a girl who basically was stolen, not to be trafficked, but just stolen and kidnapped. And yeah, know how she was able to kind of like drop little breadcrumbs and clues and do things. It was based on a true story, and he kidnapped her and drove her like across a few states. And in the end, she was say he raped her, and I'm sorry, essayed her, and several other, you know, it was pretty egregious and just really, really traumatic. And I should have said trigger warning before this. I apologize for that. But yeah, so in the end, the good news is that she was recovered. She made it home safely. And so I just thought it was really great. It was like things she did that probably are common sense that you would do. But you know, when you're panicking and you're in the moment, you may not. So she just kind of made some smart moves, and he wasn't the brightest bulb on the shelf. So, you know, and I don't mean to make it like this cliffhanger, you gotta watch it. Like I'll just say it. Like, for example, you know, he was like making stops. It was like he was very much a troubled person. So it would fluctuate between her talk him talking to her and pouring out his story to being abusive and mean and things like that. But in those moments, she just kept him talking and engaged and was able to connect to him. And he did care about her. So he would stop and get her food and things like that and made sure she ate, because he fluctuated between like, I'm gonna kill you because I have to punish you for all the women who wronged me, to I think I'll just keep you around and you'll be my wife, whatever. Both very psychotic ways of thinking, but the way, you know, she would like when he was talking about you'll just be my wife, you know, she really was trying to be very kind and show him love and things like that. And so, you know, making sure she ate. And so she would say things like, you know, are you hungry? Did you eat? You look like you're hungry. And he would be like, yeah, I haven't eaten since before I left. And she was like, I want to treat you to it. You know, can I buy it for you? Da, 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 da. It's the least I can do because you've been through so much with your own life. And so, you know, using her ATM card, you know, because he was like, I'll treat you to it. So that was obviously one way, you know, they she he used her ATM card a couple, that was what I was saying, he's not the brightest bulb on the shelf, so he used her card a couple times, so they were able to track him from, you know, they saw him in the ATM picture, then he used it in a convenience store, so from state to state they could follow him that way. And then like he was like using zip ties to put around her hands, but he would take them off. He actually brought her, you know, out to use the bathroom and stuff like that. So she would drop it on the ground and just some other little things and stuff, you know, writing on a napkin when the waitress came and, you know, just different things. So that
Being
again,
real
like,
smart about it,
just she just was trying everything because she knew he was probably going to kill her once they reached the final destination. So, you know, she really didn't try to break out into a run. One time she did, and he like punched her in the face. So she didn't try that again. So she just tried to use her smart. So it's always great when you have someone who survived to tell the story of the things they did, because they don't always end positively. So good movie. Kenya Moore did a great job. She said when she initially got the script, she was like, no, I'm not going to do this, and it's triggering and it's upsetting. But then she said she read it again and she realized that, you know, this had been brought to her for a reason, the universe, God. She said, I was supposed to do this. At first she was like, too upsetting as a mother of a daughter, but she was like, nope, this script landed in my lap for a reason. So I enjoyed it very much. And if it's not going to be too triggering, I think, you know, people check it out and stuff like that. And you know, they just don't care about black girls when we go missing, black people.
Absolutely.
And it touched on that, you know, with Kenya and her ex-husband and stuff and mother in the movie kind of saying like, look, you guys don't care, you don't you know, invest the same amount of time and resources when we go missing as you do when, you know, Karen and her daughter go missing, and I'm gonna go on the news and make a big thing, and I'm gonna, so just like super involved and not just letting it go, not just walking out of the precinct when they said, we're doing what we can. So yeah, no, it was a great movie. Not at all related to romance, but just a good movie. So yeah, I
Law and
enjoyed
Order
it.
had kind of touched on something like that too about black girls not getting the same attention as white women, which is true. Black and Hispanic girls definitely don't, which is sad,
And we got to just look out
It
for
shouldn't be the case.
ourselves and protect ourselves. That's what it feels like. Don't get taken, because if you do, the odds are not as strong that we'll be returned as they might be for our white counterparts. And that's just what it is. It's really sad.
On a positive note, I will say if you all have Hallmark this weekend coming up, I think the 24th, there's going to be a Black version of Sense and Sensibility. I just learned at my romance conference that Vanessa Riley, who I got to meet and I was gushing over, is a historical romance writer. She was a consultant on that particular movie. So she was like, please watch it. I was a consultant for this Hallmark movie for Sense and Sensibility. I thought that my only gripe is I thought everybody we here was gonna be Black, but I think the love interest is white. So I'm like, come on now. But I wouldn't call it a Black movie for a mahogany Black movie. I wouldn't call it that at all, even though it is a mahogany movie. But if the love interest is white, honey, there ain't no Black romance. But anyway, because again, the definition of Black romance is two unambiguous Black people from the diaspora. They can be England, they can be from America, they can be from the Caribbean, but they got to be Black, unambiguously self-identify as Black. But if you have a white love interest, that is not a Black romance. But I'm gonna still watch it anyway because I love Sense and Sensibility. It's one of my favorite Jane Austen books. And because they're doing Austen Fest basically this month for the month of February, all the movies have been like Jane Austen like themed. So this is kind of ending the yeah, this is kind of ending the month. With the Black Sense and Sensibility on the 24th. So y'all check that out.
Okay, sounds good. Sounds
Yeah.
good.
So in reading romance, y'all, I ain't been reading too much because I'm on deadline and I'm writing. But before I went to my romance conference, I did finish reading my arc of a love song for Ricky Wilde, and that is by the great Tia Williams. Tia Williams, she did A Perfect Fine, which turned into a Netflix movie. She also did The Accidental Diva. And as Yekini reminded me, Shake Your Beauty was her old blog back in the day, her beauty blog. But this book was, it was so gorgeous. It was like a love letter to Harlem, a love letter to the Harlem Renaissance. It was about love that transcends space and time and eras and decades and I'm trying not to get emotional, but it was just such a good book. I rarely cry at books, but I cried at the end of this book because I was just boo-hoo crying, snot running out my nose, crying, crying.
It was one
It
of those.
was so good. It was so beautiful. It was a love story. There is a happily ever after. You don't have to worry about that. It is a guaranteed happily ever after. But to just give you a quick synopsis, it's about a girl named Ricky, whose family is an Atlanta, basically a rich Atlanta dynasty family, old money family, who made money in the funeral home business. And we do have those here down in Atlanta. Got Watkins, Trimble, Leavitt, a whole bunch of people. Anyway, she's one of those families, right? And so she doesn't want to go into the family business like her stick in the mud sisters. She wants to be a florist. She said she felt like the only thing interesting about funerals was the flowers. So she's always loved flowers. She ended up getting like a certificate in like botany studies and all these other things behind her family's back. And she tells them that she wants to open a flower shop. They kind of laugh at her until she mysteriously meets this old lady named Miss Della, who tells her that she has a brownstone, an abandoned shop at the bottom of her brownstone that would be perfect for her. Just come up in the summer, see how, come up and see how it works out and see if you can make it happen, basically. And she does. She goes up and tries to make her way, but mysteriously she meets a man named Ezra, and she's trying to figure out, why am I so drawn to this man? Why am I so connected to this man? And I'm going to leave it at that because I want y'all to read it. So,
Wow.
a love song for Ricky Wilde. Again, Tia Williams is amazing. She did 7 Days in June. She did, which is going to be a television series on Amazon Prime.
Oh my. Oh.
I'm not ready for that. When they asked her to at the Love Y'all Fest, who she would want to be the lead, and she said when she wrote 7 Days in June in mind, she wanted it to be Aldis Hodge, and I was like, oh my God, I can see that. He don't get enough romances, period. But he is so handsome. So Aldis Hodge, I don't know if y'all remember him. Used to be on Underground back with Jurnee Smollett back in the day. He's been in a lot of other stuff. I think Leverage was one of the TV shows he was in, as well as what else? What else was he? Oh, he was in like Justice Society or something for DC. But anyway, he's a good looking, tall, dark skinned, gorgeous man. She said she had him in mind for like a Sean, I think Sean, I think it was his name, in 7 Days in June. So I'm excited for Tia. Like I said, this
Oh,
is amazing.
exciting.
I hope this turns into a movie too, because it would be perfect, a perfect period piece back and forth going through time. So it was so good. It was so good. So that's my pick for the month, y'all. And it's perfect for Black History Month too, because there's a lot of history in there too. Since love is, the month of love, the month of Black History is all there. And it takes place during leap year, which is this year, is a leap year. So it takes place during this year, the leap year. So this book is very timely. So y'all read it. So that's my only pick for reading romance.
Okay, awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
So all right, you guys. We'll see you all in the next episode of Romance and Color in a couple weeks.
It'll
We'll
be
be
March,
back.
I guess, right?
It
Will
will
it be
be
March for the
March,
next
girl.
15 minutes?
Yes, it'll be March. So spring will be coming right around the corner. And we'll have some more romance recommendations, some more interviews, and all that good stuff. So you all stay tuned, and we'll see you all later.
See you next time. Bye, guys.
Bye.